It's Sunday morning. Time for The Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to The Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And certainly the winds of November arrived this week with, well, as they usually do, blustery and signaling that those warm days that we've had of Indian summer are behind us, and the real deal is coming our way. And it certainly was a fabulous time to be in the outdoors, not if you're trying to fish or if you were trying to deer hunt, but if you were trying to watch waterfowl wing their way south. Certainly on Wednesday of this week and Thursday, it was just a great time to be out and really watch the first big push of birds coming south, all the way down the Mississippi, throughout the state of Illinois, through central Wisconsin. There was a big move of birds. It tells us that harder times are on the way. I went in this morning. I've got a great guest, Kerry Luft, who's the director of the Center for Conservation Leadership and a well-respected individual in the outdoors, is my guest today. And we're going to talk about things like the Land and Water Conservation Fund. We're going to talk about the British Petroleum Oil Settlement. And we're going to also talk a little bit about the National Wildlife Refuge System and what takes place when the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Department of Interior decide that they don't want National Wildlife Refuges to be planting food for wildlife and what the possible consequences of that are. But let's start off with the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which you've heard me speak of often in the last year, and now we're taking on the final period where we're either going to have the Land and Water Conservation Fund and up to $900 million a year from the taxes on offshore oil and gas come into play for the benefit of fish and wildlife and open space and access, or Congress is going to nix the whole deal. So I'm going to ask Kerry Luft what he thinks about that, as having spent a long career in journalism and the outdoors. And this is, as I've said for a long time, this is the big deal for the future of conservation in America, the reauthorization of the Land and Water Conservation Fund. So, Kerry, first of all, thank you for joining us this morning. And LWCF, Land and Water Conservation Fund, I know has been very much on your mind as well.
Yes, Charlie, this is, as you put it, this is the big megillah for conservation. 50 years ago, the outdoor industry came together to create LWCF, a fund that was authorized, not costing the taxpayer a cent. It was to take royalties from offshore drilling of up to $900 million per year and fund land and water conservation. It's been used for parks. It's been used for recreational areas. It has been the major funding mechanism for many of the important conservation projects in this country. Now, it's true that the Congress, in their wisdom, has not allocated all the $900 million every year. In fact, we only get about a third of that $900 million every year sent toward conservation. But I would ask you, as loyal listeners of this program, to think about what that would mean if that $300 million went away forever.
So, Kerry, one of the things that strikes me about this, $900 million is a lot of money. And I don't know, and I know Congress is working on this, is this to be indexed for inflation? Because the oil and gas royalties are in the billions of dollars. And I know that Speaker John Boehner, former Speaker John Boehner, was not a believer in the Land and Water Conservation Fund, not because he didn't like its principles of funding fish, wildlife, open space, access. He didn't like the slush fund that had become for special interests, where an individual congressman or woman or senator could come in and say, I want $10 million spent in my district or my state for this project, regardless of whether it was a good project or not. So what are some of the thoughts that are taking place now in Washington, which ultimately, as you said, this is the largest amount of money that can do good for the future of outdoor recreation in America. What are some of the thoughts in place that might make it more economically efficient? The new Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, we know is a big hunter. He has said land and water conservation is a very important part of America's future, but not if the money is going to continue to be wasted on patronage and poorly functioning projects.
It goes to oversight, Charlie. This is, no one is arguing that LWCF can't be reformed and made better. But taking a good program and saying there are problems with it and then walking away from it, in my view, and I think in the view of many other conservationists, is short-sighted policy. What needs to happen is some kind of oversight, a commission, if you will, that will look at LWCF, administer the funds, review the projects for compliance, review the efficiencies of the spending, and hold the people who give that funds accountable. This would eliminate a lot of the abuse.
So one of the things, Kerry, that's being kicked around, and Congressman Bishop from Utah is the leading individual. So for those of you listening who want to weigh in on this, Congressman Robert Bishop of Utah is the guy. He chairs the Land and Water, the Natural Resource Conservation Committee in the House. Interestingly, Congressman LaHood, just elected from Illinois to take the seat of the now resigned Aaron Schock, is also on the Natural Resource Committee. So here in Illinois, we have a brand new congressman who's going to weigh in on Land and Water Conservation Fund, and a congressman who's very heavily influenced by agricultural interests. And the chairman of the committee, Robert Bishop from Utah, Rob Bishop, is a huge hunter, supporter of the outdoors, but is someone who absolutely cannot stand government waste. And he's looking for new ways to address this. So if you're listening and you want to become engaged, the best thing you could probably do is get in touch with Congressman Bishop, chairman of the commission. That would be number one, and get in touch with Congressman LaHood from Illinois. But, Kerry, what are some of the other things that sportsmen's group, this is all going to happen in the next 2 weeks. The Senate's passed a version of the bill already that looks like it's very promising to those of us who like the outdoors. What are one or two other things before we take a break that you might advise individuals they could do if they belong to organizations or whatever to encourage the reformed version of LWCF?
Organize. Get the guys at your gun club. Get the folks in your fishing club. Get the people you see at the fishing pier out at Montrose Harbor. Tell them about LWCF. Pass the word around. Ask them to do the same things. As we all know, there are far, far more people who like to hunt, fish, and enjoy the outdoors than anyone realizes. Together we are a powerful voice. Call newspapers, ask them to editorialize in support of LWCF reform and reauthorization. It is vitally important to the future of conservation.
We'll be back in just a moment with Kerry Lupt with much more on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America. Thanks so much for listening. When we come back, we're going to talk about another big pot of money, $20 billion plus, from the British Petroleum Oil Settlement, and what that might mean for conservation. We're very grateful that Kerry Lupt is with us this morning. So we'll be right back. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevrolet dealers.
It's a winter wonderland, and it's your playground if you have the right equipment. Well, the 2015 Chevy Silverado is the key to a winter full of activity. With 12,000 pounds of towing capacity, Silverado can tow your snowmobiles anywhere you want to go. Hunting, ice fishing, Silverado gets 24 miles per gallon on the highway. And if you're hunting for a new truck, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer. They have leasing experts who can get you more Chevy for less money with a big fixed lease. Chevy Silverado is the first and only pickup to offer 4G LTE Wi-Fi that keeps you connected on the go. It's the longest lasting, most dependable pickup on the road, and that makes it the best choice you can make for off the road. Throw in a 2-year, 24,000-mile free schedule maintenance, and you've got yourself an all-American camping partnership made in heaven. Ask about the big fix lease at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer, or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for all the details. Track it down, and oh, by the way, there's no limit.
Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Hope that you are enjoying the show that we have this morning. Kerry Lupt, who is the director of the McGraw Center for Conservation Leadership, and as promised before the break, we're going to talk about the biggest, the largest fund of environmental damage in the history of the world, the British Petroleum Fund for damages from the Deepwater Horizon oil rig explosion in the Gulf of Mexico several years ago. Happens to be that Kerry Lupt is a native of New Orleans, a New Orleanian by nature, but also someone who spent a lot of time in the marshes of Louisiana and the Gulf Coast who has a unique perspective on those marshes and potentially what is perceived now to be $20 billion in available funds for the betterment of the environment, what that might mean, not only in Louisiana, but across America. So whether you agree that British Petroleum is guilty or not, or you agree that the fine was excessive or not, our conversation this morning is not about that. The conversation is about what $20 billion could mean for the betterment of America's natural resources. Kerry, what do you think?
Well, the main thing, Charlie, that's going on in South Louisiana, and has been for a long time, we've talked about it a lot on this show, is the erosion of the lower third of Louisiana. It's one of the most important resting grounds for waterfowl in the world. It's one of the great fisheries. It's one of the few places in the world, maybe the only place, that you can catch a crappie, which we call sockeye, a redfish, a flounder, and a bluefin tuna all in the same day. You and I have both been in the marshes south of New Orleans. We've seen the teeming place of gadwall, widgeon, canvasback, pintail, teal, scallop. It's an amazing area, and lots of the crab and oysters that are eaten in this country come from that region. Slowly over the past few decades, that's been eroding. The hope is that the BP settlement will start to fill the gap that will allow a coastal salvation plan. However, the problem is that $20 billion, as large as it sounds, it's only a drop in the bucket as to what's needed.
Let me ask you, Kerry, on that, though, how can we be assured, or how can the shareholders at BP, or I guess all of us in America, be assured that this money is going to be well spent? It's so much money being divided over a relatively small portion of the country. And in fact, in Alabama and Mississippi, and Louisiana to some extent, where this is a lot more money than it would be in the city of Chicago or the city of New York or in California. So it's disproportionate in many ways to what these areas of the country, some of them impoverished relatively, are accustomed to having. Is there the opportunity for just a lot of abuse, and at the end of the day, we won't see the kind of results that are envisioned?
There have already been cases of fraud, of people claiming damages from the BP oil spill that proved to be unfounded. But what I would say to you, Charlie, is that we still don't know the extent of the damage of that BP oil spill. I personally know fishing guides that lost millions of dollars in business when the BP Deepwater Horizon tragedy happened. Some instances have never recovered because people are afraid of that marsh and its seafood now. Well, it's a small area of the country, but it has a disproportionate effect on people who love the outdoors and people who eat seafood. Yes, there's potential for damage, but the potential of ignoring it is too great.
So as we look at this expenditure of money, which will take place in the coming years, I guess one of the last questions, Gary, we have before we switch to something which is really near term, that's the Fish and Wildlife Service and what they're doing with our national wildlife refuges. At the end of the day, $20 billion well spent to help restore the marshes of Louisiana, help clean up the Gulf Coast, work on the epoxic zone, create habitat for sea life, which is so important to feeding the world. Is $20 billion meaningful, or are we $1 trillion, if you follow me? Is this just a way to put a Band-Aid on the problem which the federal government has ignored for so long because, unfortunately, we had an oil spill and now there's a company that can pay for it? Is that a fair way to look at it?
Yes, it's definitely a fair way to look at it, Charlie. It's only a drop in the bucket as to what's needed. There is a plan out there to restore the Gulf Coast. The estimated price tag on that is $50 billion. So the BP oil settlement only goes so far. It probably buys that plan a decade of breathing room, according to our mutual friend Bob Marshall, who is the best reporter in the country on this issue. But I'll take a decade of breathing room over 20 years of slow strangulation.
I guess, Kerry, the thought of slow strangulation is probably not appealing to any of us this morning. So let me switch gears. We've got a couple minutes left, and I did promise you we'd talk about what's going on with the emerging policies of the Fish and Wildlife Service. By the way, we're visiting with Kerry Luft, who is the director of the McGraw Center for Conservation Leadership. Carrie, we are facing a very quick change in the Fish and Wildlife Service as far as their priorities. And recently, there was information released that the Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Interior, is no longer going to permit GMO crops, genetically modified crops, to be planted on national wildlife refuges. And in fact, their recommendation is that we plant no foods on national wildlife refuges. What would this mean with today's landscapes to the fish and what, not the fish necessarily, well, to some extent, but really to the wildlife, to the waterfowl, deer, turkeys, quail, and other birds that have come to depend on the National Wildlife Refuge system for food? What would that mean?
Well, as two people who like to spend time in a duck blind, Charlie, you and I have been reading for the past few years about how heavy rainfalls in the Prairie Pothole region have produced record numbers of ducks. We can debate whether they are records or not on another show, but there are a lot of ducks out there. If they go to those refuges and there's no food for them, what happens? We know what happens when the wildlife doesn't have food. They starve. If you want to see ducks in the sky, you have to take care of them somehow. How are you going to do that? There's not enough natural food in those refuges to keep the ducks flying, let alone the deer, the turkeys. We are concentrating our natural wildlife into smaller and smaller places, fewer and fewer places for them to go as agricultural practices evolve. And if we don't have food for them in the few places where they can go, anyone can figure out what happens.
So, Carrie, in the minute we have left, let me just ask this. The National Wildlife Refuge, and it's a bit of a rhetorical question, the National Wildlife Refuge system was created to provide sanctuary in some cases, but ultimately habitat in most cases. And as you just described, the food sources for wildlife, particularly migratory birds, have been so dramatically diminished with the changes in agricultural practices and the greater efficiencies. If the refuges don't provide the food, and the Fish and Wildlife Service and Department of Interior go on a policy that says, we're not going to plant food because we just don't think it's environmentally correct, are we not working really across purposes? We got about 30 seconds or so. And that's probably, as I said, a loaded question.
I'll answer it succinctly. Yes, you're absolutely right, Charlie. It's cross purposes. It's a waste of our money.
Well, folks, thanks for listening. Carrie, thank you for being with us. Carrie Luft. I'll be back next Sunday morning with more on The Great Outdoors Show. I hope you've enjoyed it. Have a great week in the great outdoors, and may the winds of November really rip this coming week and send the rest of the waterfowl migrating through Illinois. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter, the outdoor voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.